Oh, it's not that important. Yeah, it's very important to me. I blew it. But I got to get back on it. Thanks for reminding me of that. Any other good questions you got? I remember a guy who taught me more about discipleship than anybody else. I said to him, you know, how do you really get... This guy not only leads people to Christ like it's going out of style, but these people are going. I go to his community. I meet sometimes with 250 people, all of whom are his converts and people he's discipled. I said to him one day, man, how in the world? I said, you know, if they come to Christ, they take him for dinner. So, you know, we meet for lunch Wednesday. Sure, sure, man, it'd be great. Wednesday, sit down. He says, how's it going? Oh, wonderful, boys. It's real tremendous. Know the Lord. Great. Good. You got any problems? Oh, no. It's terrific. He says, you mind if I share one of my problems with you? Your problem? You got a problem? You led me to Christ? And he starts telling the guy what the problem is, and the guy immediately identifies it as his own. And he says, we're off the pad. Because I teach a person that a Christian is not a person without problems. He's a person who has the problem solver living within. So I think that's where you really develop people's confidence. That's a superficial answer to a profound question. No more? You ready? Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little more about this tomorrow night, but I would say that essentially you are talking about the same process that you have outlined in Deuteronomy 6, where it begins first of all with modeling, then it moves to the instructional stage that makes it believable, then it moves to the internalization stage where it becomes the person's personal property. No, not at all. Nobody becomes spiritual who never decides to be spiritual. It is ultimately a question of choice. I've never met a spiritual person who didn't want to be. You know, I just couldn't help it. I woke up one day and here I am. That's what God does. It's the product of a series of choices. It's one reason why I love to work with objectives with people and get them to set up the objectives. And as you and I were talking at dinner, to get it measurable, something we can get a hold of. Instead of heading out there for that moon, we're going to convert the world in the next 10 days. We're just going to do one thing for the next 10 days. That's real progress. Well, a number of things have led me to say it. About 20-some years of exposure at a very up-close, in-depth level to an awful lot of people here, overseas, in 60 countries, where I've ministered almost everyone I run into Navigator. I have never had people who have served me. See, one of the things that you learn in the kind of ministry that I sustain is you really get one collection of responses. And, you know, when you're constantly running into the same group and their primary concern is, you know, what can we do to help you, to minister to you, to support you? You know, you're tired. Why don't you just knock out for a while? It almost became a habit. I told Lauren one day, you know, it's exciting to come here because it's the only place I come where they don't kill you with overwork. Well, exception of this week, you know. Got to have an exception to make a rule. But, you know, I've come to the Glen from speaking 36 times in 1 week. And walk on the Glen, and the guy says, you know, you're not on for a day and a half. Why don't you go sack out? And I walk in, and there's a bowl of fruit. And in very few Christian conference grounds I go where they put a bowl of fruit. usually loaded with grapes because they know I love them. And there's somebody down the line someplace that says, hey, you know, he enjoys it. Why don't you give him some grapes? And they say, you know, that's so unusual because most things, Paul said, most people are concerned about their own things, not about the things of others. I think there's a reason for it. This may not be the total reason, but I think it's a reason. And that is, I think that this has been a high priority item in the organization. And what's honored in a country, Plato said, is developed there. And if servanthood is honored, it's developed there. And you have been served by the people that have discipled you. So what do? You don't know that there's any other way. Isn't that interesting? When you come to faith and somebody ministers to you, what do? You just turn around and do the same thing. I'll give you a little theory I'm working on right now. My daughter is a neonatal specialist, the field of neonatology, the newborn. It's the most fascinating research in all of the world is coming out in this area. You know what we now know? We know that the early months, the early weeks, the early days, the early minutes of a child's life are the most determinative. You know what I happen to believe? That's true in the spiritual realm. That's why the Navigators, in my judgment, have had one of the most profound ministries with a solid follow-up program. That you lead a person to Christ and don't push them out the front door and say, okay, make it on your own. Because the early hours, moments, days, weeks that you've got that new convert in up-close relationship with him, you are marking that person for life. And if during that period of time you are serving him, I will guarantee you, you are producing a servant. Because he thinks, you know, how else do you do it? Here's the most significant person in my life, the guy that led me to Christ. Started me off in the faith, and what did he do? He served me. I think we've got to ask ourselves the question now, whether we're really developing enough creative ways of continuing that as we go on up the line in the organization. See, I'm asking this in terms of my relationship to my good friend Lauren. And we're just discussing it in part today. You know, how can I serve you? Because one of the problems you have in organizational development is the higher you go, the more people avoid you. It's a lonely life, often a leader's life, because nobody comes out. They expect you. You're the president. You're the area director. You're the guy that runs this thing. You know, nobody. You don't need encouragement, do you? You're supposed to be the guy out there encouraging. The student just blew my mind this semester. Well, last semester, Christmas, he came to me, walked into my office, and said, "You got a minute, Prof?" I said, "Sure." Pushed the door closed because by then he was weeping. Tears were just rolling down his face. He said, "Prof, I hope you understand. I love you. I love you so much. And my wife and I just like to give you a Christmas gift." And he pulled out a $20 bill. And I just sat there. I just couldn't take it. I need his $20 bill like I need another hole in the head. That's the last guy on a campus at Dallas Seminary that can afford to give me $20. I found out later, not from him, but from another source. He and his wife did without food for a week to save the $20. Just kept chipping away, 25 cents. Now, how do you serve other people? Well, that's enough for tonight. You've had a long day. You're so patient.